Hello again, and welcome to the Ecosystemic Futures Podcast, brought to you by Shift and Works in collaboration with NASA Convergent Aeronautics Solutions Project. I'm your host, Diane Finkhausen, founder and CEO of Shift and Works and the Ecosystemic Futures Series. As our world is increasingly digital and interconnected, ecosystemic models are reshaping the fundamental frameworks within society, industry, economy, and policy, and reframing how we innovate and build for resilient futures. In this series, we're exploring these new ecosystemic models and impacts and the future implications for humanity and society and industry. In this episode, we'll continue our dive into the future of work, tackling ecosystemic change in order to unlock economies, workforce, workplace, and worker futures in order to match pace with market innovation. My co-host today is David Wagner. David, welcome back.
Hello. Thank you, Diane. Yes, I'm David Wagner. My training is in civil and mechanical engineering. And I typically do computational materials work for NASA using high-performance computer, though lately I've been given the opportunity to scan the horizon a little bit more broadly for some of the problems that we might want to conquer and do. And we're currently looking at doing a deep dive into the future of work, which affects us all.
Fantastic. Well, we've got the right guest here to help us think through this today. So to that point, welcome back, Steve. Steve Hatfield is Global Future of Work Leader for Deloitte. Steve, we're thrilled to continue our conversation with you today about work futures. Maybe share, for our listeners just dialing in today, maybe share a little bit about your background.
Sure. Well, thank you, Diane. Thank you, David. Very happy to be here. So I lead our efforts globally on the topic future of work at Deloitte. We began to see some of the trend lines around the changes to work, workforce, and workplace due to technology and demographics through our Human Capital Trends Report, the largest longitudinal study of its kind. The 13th year came out this year. And I remember writing one of the chapters on man and machine collaborating back in 2015. And so when the firm launched the program, they asked me to take on the role in 2017. What's been really fascinating for me is, of course, the ability to kind of watch these trends evolve through the acceleration that happened during the pandemic and the extent to which in the earlier days, I was spending time helping organizations understand that future of work was something to pay attention to. Then it became extremely popular. And now, of course, the conversation has shifted to what's on the next horizon. So thrilled to be here.
Thrilled to have you here and to help us think through the future of work futures and the path to goodness here. So Steve, just for our listeners to recap where we've been in these episodes, if folks are dialing in, on this episode in particular, we would encourage everyone to be sure to go back and listen to the previous two episodes where we really first framed out some of the wicked problem landscape that is motivating this incredible shift to workforce futures. And then we turned our focus to the potential future state scenarios that these new workforce, workplace, and work models are unlocking for humanity and organizations. So we'll look in the rearview mirror and we'll look to the future. And today in this conversation, we're going to be spending some time with how we begin to maybe prune some of those branches of the future state scenarios that might represent some of the more harmful and potential future state scenarios and really encourage and lean into the pathways that would unlock more beneficial outcomes in the future of work. As we know, with any mega trend, there are potential intended and unintended consequences in the design and application of new technologies, new models. And we have that opportunity here as we look forward to the future of work. There are so many facets of organizational design, work design, the application of technologies, the allocation of capital and talent. The world of possibilities is wide open. So, Steve, how should we be thinking about designing for ecosystemic resilience and dynamic resilience in the future of work landscape?
I often talk about a set of shifts that are taking place. And these are the places where you can begin to see where to focus and what actions to take. So the first, I would argue, is this move away from jobs and traditional job descriptions to skills. And that dialogue isn't new, but it's really about the job descriptions of old feel a bit outdated, and the realization that we need to understand the worker in terms of their whole human and what they bring to the table. The skills that you need to bring to any project or any effort or any outcome, and how do you foster those skills? And so suddenly, it opens the aperture in terms of who you're looking at, the new pools of talent. It's not just about pedigree anymore. It moves past that to the folks that have real deep experience and skill sets that can be applied in your organization that you may be filtering out because of your recruiting processes. But it also helps you hone into, well, what are those enduring human capabilities that we want to continue to foster? Complex systems thinking, analytical thinking, hypothesis-driven problem solving, creativity, empathy, and those additional knowledge and other skills that you can continually upskill and reskill folks into. And through that, you can then tap into the next shift, which gets into this move away from full-time employees necessarily to something more about ecosystems and the various parts of an ecosystem that come to the table to help you achieve your outcome. So suddenly, skills unlocks ecosystems. What are the skills I need in the ecosystem? How do I find those in different talent models? How do I bring them into the ecosystem, curate them, orchestrate them, and direct them at the work we're trying to get done? We did a study with MIT. Those organizations that are paying attention to ecosystems and orchestrating them are 8 times more likely to curate that ecosystem toward their business outcomes, and 5 times more likely to help project managers organize the work to let an ecosystem player come to the table. And then third, it's this difference between being kind of hierarchical and top down to being much more bottoms up and tapping into the agency of the workforce themselves. And that starts to make more sense when you think about it in context of ecosystems and skills. Suddenly it's about the worker sort of charting a course toward doing things that ignite their interests, that they're passionate about, that they're excited to go do. And it taps into the zeitgeist of what millennials and Gen Zs and the younger workforce is looking for. They are much more likely to join your organization for learning and growth and development opportunities. It's sort of it's the number one reason they would choose to come work for you and with you. And so it enables you to begin to tap into that, to let them follow those adjacencies. And the digital platforms that exist today, talent opportunity marketplaces, enable you to actually digitize some of this, make it much more fluid and adaptable in your organization. And we're watching organizations tap into that. And so those three really shape the core of it. But once you're in that model, what starts to also become apparent are two other important shifts. So one for me is this move to think about how humans and machines are collaborating in a way that augments the worker. So suddenly this taps into what we're hearing so much about with generative AI. So suddenly it's well, what are those skills that are uniquely human? And what do these toolkits do that enables to elevate that humanity? Because they're dealing with a lot of the drudgery or the other sort of rote dimensions of anyone's job. They say that 70% of an engineer's time is spent finding the data. If ChatGPT can help her do that while she's getting a cup of coffee, what will she do to unlock the rest of her time, right? And within that, the final shift becomes apparent, which is this mindset around productivity needs to shift to something else. I think of it much more about human performance and how humans perform, again, as humans. The AI toolkits and the robotics toolkits are driving out the lion's share of what we think about in terms of efficiency and output. And we're boiling it down to humans doing uniquely human things. That productivity measure doesn't quite hold anymore. And it means, well, how do we elevate to a different measure? One that's thinking about the whole human and human sustainability and humans performing at their best as humans, people who work better in the evening or in the morning. It elevates all kinds of conversations about what do you measure to try to generate well-being? What do you measure to try to put a focus on humans operating against those human skills I mentioned before, the judgment and creativity and empathy and productivity, meaning throughput and output in an efficiency standpoint, doesn't quite hold. And so just to wrap, it's about jobs to skills. It's about FTEs to ecosystems. It's about hierarchical to agency. It's about from automation to augmentation around these toolkits. And then finally, how do we think past productivity to something else, something like human performance?
Wow, there's a lot to get into there. And a couple of them reminded me of something that's going on right now as we record this. And because you were talking about how we're looking at the possibility of more bottom-up worker-driven change that's needed, and how might worker unions help drive those changes, especially in light of the integration of artificial intelligence into our workflows. And while that's going on, of course, all of the shifts in the future of work are going to require some regulatory innovation that aligns more closely with market innovation. That's particularly true when unions get involved. So how can we best all, so in addition to what can our unions do, union leaders do, what our policy leaders might be able to be primed and prodded into a better aligning with the future of work that we're headed into?
It's a great question, David. I think that the signal around what we're watching with unions and sort of the reignition of them is interesting in light of this conversation around hierarchy and agency, and interesting in light of this conversation around augmentation. And so my hope is that we tap into that agency, because you're going to need that broad scale. You're going to need that worker at the coalface to spend time with these toolkits to help that innovation come to life. That's part of what we saw happen. ChatGPT hit 100 million users within 8 weeks as compared to TikTok, which took 9 months, and the iPhone, which took something like 2 years. And so, we look at this unionism and that level of activity, potentially with this sort of backdrop of sort of the political dynamic, as opposed to one of the societal dynamic from my standpoint. So that agency is coming to life and workers are saying, wait, we have a particular role here, and it behooves organizations to sort of listen to that and tap into it. Now, the second part of your question, though, is the reg environment. This one's also critical, and I'm sure that's obvious, but we are talking about how do we manage the regulatory environment around these technologies? How do we ensure ethical and trustworthy AI, for example? How do we ensure that we are creating, if you will, the just transition that needs to happen around some of those worker populations that could be potentially left behind, which relates to much of the conversation we had in our last podcast. And so I think it behooves the reg environment to try to get ahead of this in many respects. And it's more than just trustworthy and ethical AI or the kinds of things that are necessary to support workers in terms of their social safety networks and things of that kind. I mean, we're starting to talk about tech in a really interesting way. Dread opening the door on sort of neurotechnologies and what's happening in terms of the way that we're sort of spending time with those technologies as they come to life in the workforce. And yet we have absolutely no regulatory framework on how neurotechnologies can or should be applied. And so it's the wild, wild west. And yet those technologies are coming to the table really quickly. And you see that with smart hats and Muse and other technologies that are starting to be brought to the workplace.
You know, I hear neurotech and I just get this chill, Steve, because they are coming online and hitting mainstream pretty quickly. They're not there yet, but they're going to show up pretty fast. And I think we'll see pretty widespread use cases start to show up on the landscape. And you're right, the regulatory position on this and the policy kind of frameworks within the industrial landscape just really are lagging there.
Yeah, it's fourth podcast.
It is. All right, to be continued. But yeah, I mean, that's just a really great and, can I say, chilling example of what happens if we are caught flat-footed, if we don't proactively, regularly pulse check the signals, right, and do our sensing and sense-making on a regular basis, run some very thoughtful futures work regularly, and proactively factor out what that means for society, industry, and basically our industry, our organization. And then as individual agents, what that means for us. We know that with the onset of the platform economy, the supply side of the economy, the worker does have greater agency, does have greater optionality. To your point, Steve, with all of these incredible talent and innovation marketplaces, and with the digital landscape, workers have the greater voice and choice that they can exercise in their careers. We're seeing the emergence and maturation of portfolio careers, right? Which is fascinating and encouraging. It's a little bit challenging if you're just getting started with a portfolio career, but the marketplaces make it easy for you to get started in that direction. But talent does have greater agency, kind of net overall, and organizations need to recognize that with this more efficient economic landscape for talent, organizations need to be mindful of kind of the trust economy and how they're showing up on the trust landscape with basically the ethical frameworks and the ethical applications of these new models and technologies, and how transparent, if an organization isn't transparent, that's okay. The workers will shine the bright light and will remediate that lack of transparency. We've seen that time and time again in social media and headlines. So there is a whole kind of trust economy underpinning for the future of work that is really a new currency in this economy. So how should we be thinking about that trust landscape, Steve, and the ethics frameworks that need to really kind of roll out alongside the new technologies, the new business models that the technologies are unlocking?
Great question, Dan. We've been doing some research as of late on what we're calling the quantified organization. And so this gets at the idea that we're sort of moving into a world where, thanks to the digital tools we're talking about, we can begin to measure just about anything. Think about it in terms of the 120 zettabytes of data, which is 10 to the 21st power, that we will consume this year. And then think about it in relation to the AI toolkits that are unlocking our ability to use this. Well, what are the kinds of things that organizations are measuring? You know, Hitachi, for example, has a happiness index, right? And so, which puts a real interesting frame on the earlier comment I made about moving away from productivity alone to something else, something about human performance and all these other ideas about sustainability and well-being and humans operating at their best. Well, fundamental to all of it is the data sets belong to the workers. And that may change jurisdiction to jurisdiction. We didn't really talk about that from a reg environment, but when you think about GDPR, and there's somewhere in the vicinity of 17 other countries that have adopted those frameworks, and the way in which those things were evolving, some of the ethical AI frameworks that are emerging in China and certain states in the US, it puts this real beginning spotlight on the fact that to unlock those data sets, you really have to do it at the worker level. And it's the worker generating that data through their day-to-day work activities. Well, suddenly there you go. Right there, you're at trust, right? So if the worker trusts the organization, they're that much more likely to provide access to that information and or feel more comfortable about that information being used. And so trust takes on a whole different dimension than it may have even a few years ago, because that trusting relationship isn't just critical to the worker being motivated to doing more work for you or being motivated to bringing their best work or to the best self to the table. It's actually critical to them feeling comfort that you're going to be using that information that they're generating in the right way. And for them, that means things like sharing the benefit of that information with them in their work life. And so studies are starting to emerge. We're doing one now. We'll provide with trailer to this, you know, as we go forward. But there, this instant belief that workers don't want organizations and enterprises to use that information is actually not the case. If you can provide a better workforce experience for them, right? Provide me, use my skills data, but provide access to other opportunities within the enterprise that I could go pursue, or use the passive data from how I'm operating on digital toolkits, but it means that IT is coming to the table much more quickly to help me out when I have a problem, or using this information in a way that creates a better experience for me in the workplace overall, helps me find the information I need to get my job done. They're much more likely to let you have at it. So this trust dynamic is actually a little bit more about a shared value and a shared benefit. They trust you because you're using the data in a way that serves them, and it's showing up in the way that you tell them it will. And so I think it's taken on new light. It's not just the fabric of the organization in terms of how there's the interplay of the worker with the workplace, but also it's the way in which workplaces of the future will unlock new and interesting levels of value through the nature of the data that their own workforces generate.
Yeah, there are a lot of challenges at every scale of the future of work, from the individual worker all the way up to national policy issues and even international issues. How do you think we can best surmount some of those multi-scale challenges to better plan for the future?
Dave, you always ask the hard questions. So I think that it behooves enterprises to step into a little bit to the influencing at the policy level, what needs to happen here in ways that they're sort of appreciating and understanding from the beginning. So, you know, you started to hear early on various players in the Gen AI space sort of nudging sort of the US government to step into regulating some of that, right? That's a nice signal around some of what I'm talking about, the way that GDPR has shaped some of the ownership of data that I've spoken of, and others have adopted the framework. If you're a large global organization, you sort of have to move to that level of common denominator across all, right? And so I think that enterprises are the ones that need to help parliaments and governments globally to sort of appreciate what kind of regulatory environment needs to emerge in order for some of these platform economies to exist at their best. I'm not suggesting that governments aren't actually starting to do so, but I think that the enterprises are the ones that get there first and need to help governments move more quickly.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. We're seeing that really around the world, right? There is a new generation of public-private partnership and collaboration and information sharing that is emerging. And I agree with you. I think that collaboration, proactive collaboration, needs to mature quickly because the pace of change, right? You have the horizon, the innovation horizon, the adoption horizon, and the regulation horizon, broad brushstrokes kind of in that order. And the gap can become quite incredible with the pace of innovation these days. So we need proactive and thoughtful collaboration in the early days of what's possible. As we start to unlock those impossible futures together, we need to do so with thoughtful governance and constructs so that we move things in the direction of goodness versus the direction of unintended consequences and digital collisions. So this has been fascinating, and my goodness, did that time fly by. But alas, it is time to wrap it up there. And obviously, Steve, we'll continue to follow in your digital wake as you and your team continue to research, publish, and do a lot of goodness in this space. But while we have you, Steve, closing thoughts for our listeners today.
So I take a page from Hans Rosling in his book, Factfulness, and he talks about being a possibilist. And so I see the possibilities here. These signals sort of indicate that there's this possible future coming where we're on these platforms, where we have the right, call it regulatory frameworks, where we're sort of doubling down on frameworks, measures that sort of further elevation of humans, further the trust economy, as you've described it, where we can begin to unlock some of the divides that exist in terms of those that are accessing these platforms and gaining these opportunities and those that are not, but can be lifted up onto them. And I think that there's this sort of world coming where this elevation of humanity and this scale of some of what you talk about, Diane, this goodness is there. And so I hold on to those possibilities because I think that's the future that we all want to create.
I love that. I'm with you. And yeah, I do believe we'll get there, and we'll get there quite quickly. And there is enough of a conversation out there about how we should be thinking about this and taking action. Thanks in no small part due to the great work that you and your team are doing. David, as we wrap up the conversation here, your thoughts, your closing thoughts and key takeaways from this episode and the preceding conversations that we had with Steve regarding the landscape and the journey for the future of work.
Yeah, thank you, Diane. The things that what we've been talking about more recently, I wholeheartedly agree. Trust, it's so critical and difficult to maintain at every level in a dynamic and ever-shifting environment. Perhaps that might be the greatest challenge to the future of work. And I would look forward to exploring that more, perhaps in another series.
Episode 4, right? So I think, Steve, we're going to have to take you up on your offer. But right, if anyone is offering those unimpossible futures, it's NASA. And we're so grateful that NASA has sponsored this series of conversations and is challenging us to think bigger and to take action now, right? So we have the opportunity to run some experiments in the future of workspace and with a high degree of confidence in the guidance that we're getting from thought leaders like you, Steve, and your team. So again, thank you. This has been a fascinating discussion. Really excited about where we go from here collectively. And I want to thank our listeners again for listening in as we take a peek into the future of work as Steve and the Deloitte team are envisioning the possibilities to be. So again, this has been a series with Steve Hatfield on the future of work and work futures, the future of work, workforce, workplace, and worker experience, as unlocked by so many of the innovations and technologies that we're seeing roll across markets. This is an exciting renaissance moment in humanity where we are truly in a position where we can optimize performance and elevate the human experience. The future of work is in fact now. So if you joined us just for this episode, please do be sure to catch up on the two previous episodes with Steve Hatfield on the future of work. And join us for our Ecosystemic Futures podcast series brought to you by ShushumWorks in collaboration with NASA Convergent Aeronautics Solutions Project, where we'll continue to explore topics like this with leading experts around the world so that we can collectively and now design for greater ecosystemic resilience. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or all your favorite places to access podcasts, and you can always learn more at ShushumWorks.com.